Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for High Velocity Radio.
Lee Cantor here, another episode of High Velocity Radio, and this is going to be a good one. Today on the show, we have Brad Englert with Brad Englert Advisory. Welcome, Brad.
Thanks for having me.
I am so excited to learn what you're up to. Tell us a little bit about your firm. How are you serving folks?
Well, I do IT consulting. One of my latest projects was for a regional liquor store chain, and they needed an IT strategy. They grew from one store to 100 stores, and their IT was stuck at about 40 stores. And we came up with a mobile app and delivery and a new website, and that certainly served them well during the pandemic.
So what is the typical pain that one of your clients is having where they're like, I better call Brad and his team?
Well, it's usually when their business has grown exponentially, but their IT has remained where it was when they started. And so that's a real pain point.
But what's a symptom that they would notice that's like, hey, you know, we're growing really fast, but I don't think our infrastructure is keeping up?
Complaints from your customers. They're in the example I just mentioned, the customers were frustrated that the website was difficult to navigate, and they loved the company, but were just frustrated that they couldn't order what they wanted the way in an easy way. So frustrated customers.
Is there, so I understand, like, if a customer is like complaining and they have a relationship with the people in charge, they can voice that. But is there anything like that you can notice just from metrics or from, you know, things going on the website or on your business that might be a clue that, hey, we better get ahead of this?
Well, one thing I see most often is they have their own equipment on site, and usually it's not very well protected or backed up very well. And in today's world, most of that can be outsourced to the cloud. So a lot of these companies can quickly take advantage of outsourcing their services to the cloud, which gives them much better resilience in terms of disaster recovery and security.
Now, how'd you get into this line of work? Were you always involved in IT?
Yes, I started after graduate school. I started with Arthur Andersen, which became Andersen Consulting, which became Accenture. And my work was in IT consulting. And most of it was in public sector, but also I did a lot of higher ed consulting. So my clients were University of Michigan, Illinois, Columbia, Vanderbilt, Texas A&M, et cetera. And I really enjoyed higher ed because, you know, they have smart people with big issues that needed to be solved. And the firm, when I joined, was 40,000 globally. Now there's 700,000 people in Accenture globally.
Wow. Now, you have a book out, Spheres of Influence. How did that come about?
Well, after I left Accenture, retired, I was called by the University of Texas at Austin, my alma mater, and they needed an IT strategy. And so I offered to help them because I knew higher ed, and they wanted someone who had outside the university. And it was an hour a week pro bono, so they're too cheap to pay for my parking or dry cleaning. And after about 3 months, they asked me, would I serve half-time? And I said, sure, I can do that. And by 3 months later, I was full-time and became the chief information officer for 7 years. So at the culmination of my second retirement, I had all these stories from 22 years with Accenture and 8 years total with the university, and I just wanted to share them with the world.
And they're around the theme of relationships and spheres of influence. Can you talk a little bit about how kind of this thesis came about and how you were able to connect dots and see this kind of the importance of relationships when it comes to business?
Sure. Well, it started with the great mentors I had at the firm over 22 years. I actually went back and looked at my annual reviews for 22 years. And my boss and mentors did a really good job of giving me stretch roles and preparing me for becoming a partner. I was a partner for 10 years. And mentoring was always a big part of being in the firm. You were expected to mentor others, grow the pie bigger. And when I got to the university, I had a big culture change on my hands where the culture of central IT was kind of reactionary, fire drill, you know, we're heroes to save the day. And really, I wanted to change it to more of a customer-oriented view of the world and relationship with our customers. And after I left the university, I still mentor two or three people, but that's not very scalable. And I can't clone myself. So I thought, why don't I package these stories into a book and help people who are starting their careers or already established in their careers? And the two spheres of influence relate to those people you have the most direct impact with. That's the internal sphere of influence. That would be your boss, direct reports, executive leaders, and all your staff. And then you have an external sphere of influence where you have less direct impact, and that would be your customers, peers and influencers, and strategic vendor partners. And so I talk about all those different types of relationships and how to be successful. The three principles that are in all relationships are you need to understand their goals and aspirations. You need to set and manage expectations, and you need to genuinely care about their success.
Now, do you think that this premise applies to the non-business world, like your own relationships in your family or your in your community?
I think they can. Asking those people, you know, what are their goals and aspirations? What do they want to achieve in life? Setting and managing expectations is, it's so easy to get crosswise if you don't talk about what the expectations are, and then genuinely caring about their success. I mean, who doesn't want that?
Now, do you find that, do most people have this empathy gene that you're, I think, referring to, this ability to truly care about someone else's well-being and success? I mean, there's a lot of folks who look at business as kind of more of a transactional occurrence rather than this deeper relationship-driven interaction.
Well, certainly it can be transactional. Traditional networking tends to be transactional and short-lived and many times superficial. You finish the happy hour with a stack of cards and, you know, everyone has a what's in it for me mindset. And I just think that rarely leads to successful outcomes. What I find is if you focus on understanding what people need, like your customers, setting those expectations and caring about them, it's a more rewarding business life and it's more fun.
Yeah. And I think it's less stressful. I think a lot of times in my experience, like in selling, for example, when I started out, I was trying to sell whatever I had to whoever was in front of me. And then over time I learned, why don't you just have your secret sauce superpower that you do great and then just find people that match. And then when you're having a conversation with someone, all you're doing is trying to see if it's the right fit and figure out ways that you can help them. And if it's you as the solution, great. If it's not you, great. You met somebody else that, you know, might refer you down the road, but don't force fit your solution into their problem.
And there are times when I would say, I'm not the right person for you, but I'll find someone for you. Liquor store retail firm wanted me to be their IT guy, but I wanted to write this book. So I said, I'll find someone who will help you. And a woman who worked with me at the firm, brilliant, she actually helped Dell build Dell.com back in the late 90s. And then she was with them for 15 years, and then built a medical marijuana website for a Canadian company. So she knew controlled substance over the web, much better qualified than me. And she knocked it out of the park.
Now, do you find that that just takes kind of time in business to come to that level of maturity and humbleness? and in order to really serve people. Like, I find that this isn't a lesson that many young people kind of have that aha moment at the beginning. It's something that is learned over time.
Well, I have young mentees who that you can find their blurbs on the back of the book, which they embrace the stories and are practicing some of the skills. The good news is you don't have to be born with this ability. It's a learned skill, and you just have to practice and follow the principles. And so I've been pleased with the feedback I've been getting from those just entering their career. And then the established leaders, they say, Brad, I wish I read your book 20 years ago. That would have really been a help.
Now, are they taking it to heart and not just reading it and going, oh, that's a great idea, you know, for somebody else, but our business is different. We, you know, that wouldn't work here.
Well, these principles are really applied to a diverse range of industries, organizations, and backgrounds. And I've worked in private sector and public sector, higher ed, and these principles apply to all of them.
Yeah, I think that this is just the heart of being a good human is, you know, to focus on relationships and how you serve somebody and how you really help them. And it's like the old saying from these early books, you know, from the beginning of last century about, you know, if you can help someone else be successful, you're going to be successful in the long run.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think these are universal principles that have stood this test of time.
So when I joined the university, I met with a faculty member, been with the university for 40 years. Electrical engineer. I worked with him on a strategy 15 years prior for a statewide network, and we were successful. And I said, okay, give me some advice. He goes, get out of your office and tell me you give a damn.
Right.
And it was so true. And so I made a point that to build a network throughout. So the university has 52,000 students, 4,000 faculty, 21,000 staff. And I made a point to build a network at the executive level. And every 6 to 8 weeks, I would meet with deans, associate deans, my peers, assistant vice presidents, and just ask, you know, what's going well with Central IT? What could we do better? And how can I help you? And one of the best relationships was with the campus safety and security associate vice president, because we knew it was not if there would be a problem, but when there would be a problem. And I wanted to make sure that everything Central IT could do in a bad situation would be there and tested and ready to go.
And then after having this relationship, did that help you kind of manage a situation that did occur?
Yes, we had a bomb scare, we had a shooting, we had a murder, and we had electricity go out. Now, the electricity hadn't gone out in 15 years. We actually generate our own electricity and backed up by a utility. Both failed. And once a year, we would get together, both our teams, and we would have disaster recovery scenarios. We actually prototyped or had a tabletop exercise of a power outage. What would we do? You have no power, you have no network. And then we had an ice storm. We had a hurricane because we're close enough to the coast that we can get tornadoes. And by practicing these drills, we just got better at, you always found gaps, and we got better and better. Now, you can't anticipate everything, though. And so in both our organizations, if there was a situation where the executives were called to the executive emergency operations center, we made sure that we had our backup operations centers ready to go. So if there's a fire in the building where the main emergency operations center is, they were going to come over to my building and use our center. If that was compromised, then we would go to the third center, which was more than a mile away from central campus, and that would be ready. So when there's a situation, we all get on a conference call. We get the orders from executives. We make sure the cable TV is working, the copper phone lines are working, when the power came back on, the network working, and we just work the issue. And because you can't anticipate everything.
Now, you mentioned earlier that part of the thesis of this is that your spheres of influence can be broken into two sections, internal and external. Is something actionable for the listener right now? Do you actually kind of write down the names of these spheres of influence, or you know who they are by name, and then you can like put them in the calendar like you just mentioned and say, okay, every within 6 months, I'm going to make sure I have some communication with all of my internal and a portion of my external. Like, do you do it that kind of tactically?
Yes. And I had 7 direct reports at the university. I asked them to do the same. So they all had 7 to 10 relationships across the campus. And that became like our nervous system. And in our weekly meetings, we would talk about, you know, what have you heard? What's going well? What could we change? Our rumors, we would hear rumors. One rumor was that we didn't have enough diesel for the generators when there was an issue. Well, the generators were running on natural gas, so that was a good rumor, but it wasn't true. It was very intentional. There's a technique that I describe in the chapter on peers and influencers, and it's called power mapping. So you lay out your organization chart and you find, okay, who are your peers? And then, and same thing with direct reports, ask them to do the same. And then who are the influencers? So peers are on the same level you are, but influencers could be anywhere. And so it's intentionally finding those peers and influencers and then connecting with them. And yes, setting it up on your calendar, because when the meeting comes up, you always remember, oh, I need to tell them about XYZ. And we had several major projects. We replaced all 21,000 phones and moved into voice over IP. So we basically irritated everybody. Well, you want to let people know that's coming.
Right. You don't want to surprise them on Wednesday that this is happening Friday.
Exactly.
Now, what's a manageable amount of relationships for a person? I mean, when we're all online nowadays, it makes it seem like, you know, some people have millions of followers or millions of people they think that they're influencing. How many is manageable in your mind, like internally and externally?
I think 7 is a good number. Textbook span of control is 5 ± 2. But I think 7 is a good amount, evenly split between internal and external. Your boss you're going to meet with weekly. Your direct reports you'll meet with weekly. Staff, we would meet quarterly. I did a weekly blog to all the staff to reinforce our values and give kudos where deserved. Customers, we would meet with the customers. And I had one customer that the relationship wasn't working out. And we were providing service, and they wanted to keep one of their staff people also to help with the service, a hybrid solution. Unfortunately, every time something went wrong, their staff would point at us and blame us for the problem. So I took my peer executive out to lunch and described the problems and how they were recurring. And he looked up at me and said, "You're firing me as a customer, aren't you?" And I said, "Yes, I am." And I'm going to buy you lunch, and you don't have to pay me for any service provided to date. And he understood.
Yeah, it's that best fit. I mean, everybody does their best work when you have that good fit and everybody is on the same page and everything's aligned. So many times the problem is that you just force fit something into something, and it's just not an optimal relationship for either side, really.
That's right.
So if somebody wants to learn more about your firm and or learn more about the book, is there a website? What's the best way to get a, connect with you?
Website is bradenglert.com. I'm on LinkedIn. I have a YouTube channel, which has a book trailer and five funny stories. Good customer service, It Never Happened, Swiss Cheese Feet, Copious Notes, and Give a Damn. So those are kind of some fun vignettes from the book. And then the book is on Amazon. It's a bestseller. And I encourage people to check it out.
Good stuff. Well, congratulations on all the success and the momentum. The website, again, is bradenglert.com, bradenglert.com. Brad, thank you so much for sharing your story today. You're doing such important work, and we appreciate you.
Thank you. I appreciate the invitation.
All right. This is Lee Cantor. We'll see you all next time on High Velocity Radio.